Hey, let's start the show.
Welcome to This Is Only a Test. This is episode 54, recorded February 24, 2011. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, sitting directly to my left, wearing a squid t-shirt. You're on the squid t-shirt kick lately, too, I noticed, Mr. Chan.
I like squids.
How you doing, Norman?
I'm doing okay. Oh, my goodness.
This has been a crazy, crazy bananas day so far, and it's only going to get crazier right now. Joining us virtually from across the great continent of ours, from Toronto, Canada, we have the one and only Mr. Matt Braga.
Hey, folks.
How you doing, Matt?
Not bad. How about you guys?
We're a boot pretty good.
Did you catch that? There was a bit of language slip. I said, how a boot?
Yeah, I know. That's why I put in a boot in there unnecessarily. what's it like in Toronto? We're going to get snow here tonight.
No, we're not. No, we are not. You're lying.
They're saying we're supposed to get snow.
I've lived here for 26 years.
I saw snow once.
I have never seen snow ever in San Francisco.
I lived here for 10 years and I saw snow one time in 2007. High on a mountaintop in San Francisco. So is it still winter in Toronto, Matt?
Yes and no. I mean, you guys would be impressed. We went up to a balmy 8 degrees Celsius last week.
Oh, my God. That's like negative 35 Fahrenheit. That's fantastic.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know what it translates to. We talked about this before. But, it wasn't bad. I mean, it's getting a little snowier again, but nothing we can't handle. So,
Well, we know that. This has been a huge day today for tech news. Huge week. It's Motorola week, kind of. The Motorola Atrix came out on Tuesday, I guess. It seems like
it
so long ago.
It did come out on Tuesday.
The Zoom, the first Honeycomb tablet, came out today. I have it in my left hand right now. It's shiny. We did an hour live this morning doing a quick look. If you want to see the quick look, it'll be up on the site probably by the time this podcast is live, if not sooner.
Absolutely will be.
Let's just jump right into it. Skip the friendly banner. What are your impressions, Norm? How are you feeling about it?
It's real tablet. It's real, really, it's really fast.
You think it's an iPad competitor, finally?
It's absolutely. It's better than the iPad in many, many ways. Not as good in some ways, but there are things, especially the iPad at launch. We remember, like, we were all pretty impressed by the iPad the first day it came out, but there were a lot of things that it didn't do that it does now.
Like the multitasking
and all that. The app switching, and this does all of that and more, and in many ways better too. The multitasking is similar. You know, you hit a button and you get the last five apps used, but it's not just the icons. You actually get to see little screen grabs of, you know, what it was that you were doing in that task.
You haven't had any time to spend with this yet, Matt, right? I assume.
No, none at all. I mean, I got to handle the sort of dummy unit at CES, but that was about it. No final software on it.
I mean, I have to say I was really skeptical of the dummy units at CES because they weren't letting people handle them, which was always – that's never a good sign in my experience. But the final result is, you know, performance is very fluid. Everything seems to work kind of as you'd expect. The UI is very different from an Android phone. So I wonder if maybe they didn't want people spending 3 minutes with it saying, oh, my God, I don't like this just because it's different at CES. It's a pretty neat piece of kit right now. Price is a little bit high, I think, but – when you actually break down what you're getting, it doesn't seem that high. Because, you know, if you compare it to a 16 gigabyte iPad, it seems like kind of a ripoff.
iPad Wi-Fi, but if you compare it to a 32 gig iPad 3G. With 3G, which is what? What is that? It starts
730 is what it is. Yeah. It's $100 for the 32 gigs and $130
more,
for the radio.
And this is something that I would argue is better than the iPad as it is. So you really got to compare, like, $600 for the Wi-Fi version is the same price as a 32 gig iPad also.
Exactly. Okay, so Zoom is out. Atrix is out. That's exciting because, like the Zoom, it's dual core, but this is the first dual core Android phone we've had a chance to take.
I think they're both using actually the same Tegra 2 dual core. I don't know if they're both clocked the same. I think yes, actually. Just because the Atrix has to run a lot more than a typical Android phone has run. First, it's screen. Even though it's 4-inch screen, it's still running 960 by 540.
It's a few more pixels. It seems like not many more pixels when you look at the resolution, but after using it for a couple of days, mm-hmm. you really notice the extra pixels.
And then, of course, the zoom is 1280 by 800, which is pretty like it's a nice few more pixels than the iPad, which at 1024 by 768. It's also slightly bigger. The zoom
it's
is
taller. Yeah, it's, yeah. It's 16 by 9 instead of 4 by 3.
And of course, the Atrix, you know, needs the dual core because it's also running that little Linux webtop OS.
I haven't gotten a chance to test that yet because I don't think our dock has come yet. But
no,
it's,
we chose not to buy the dock on the first day and then we're misled.
Let me tell you why I didn't buy the dock on the first day. He said it was $200 and I knew for a fact that the retail on the dock is $89 or mm-hmm. $90 or something like that. So what AT&T was doing, who was the only person who had the only company that had the docks, was bundling them with a cheap, shitty Bluetooth keyboard and mouse for $200.
That's bullshit because the point of the dock is that with the dock, the multimedia dock on the Atrix, mm-hmm. There are USB ports on the back so you can plug in USB.
Exactly. So you can use a real keyboard and mouse with it. I don't take kindly to coercion this aggression will not stand, Norman Chan.
Yeah, I agree. But Webtop itself, I mean, from all the reviews, it's Webtop is interesting. That laptop, the $500 laptop dock, is completely useless. I agree. I know that's like $200 if you buy it as a bundle with the phone. But even then, the performance of that Linux OS running on the dual-core Tegra 2, it's not that great. It's like netbook quality.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's worse than netbook quality.
Because you can't install any apps.
Yeah, compared to a modern netbook, then it's significantly underperforming, it seems like. And the real kicker is you have to pay for tethering in order to use your phone's data connection.
I mean, you can use Wi-Fi,
the webtop.
But if you want to be on mobile and use the HSPDA Plus, it's like $20 a month.
Yeah, I thought it was 30. But yeah, I mean, it is a royal screwing. He asked me if I wanted it, and I asked what the details were and if I wanted to sign up for tethering, and I said, no, that sounds like a really real screwing. And the guy said, and I said, has anybody taken this so far today? And he said, no, nobody wants that. So Atrix, I mean, but the phone by itself is pretty interesting even without all the dock stuff.
It's a good phone.
Yeah, it seems like a good phone. It's a little disappointing that it's running Moto Blur.
Of 2.2?
Yeah. I mean, it's disappointing it's not running Gingerbread. B, it's disappointing it's running Moto Blur instead of stock Android. But Moto Blur is actually not bad. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I set up all my stuff in there. I'm using the key interface. The interface is fast. Their customizations to the software work reasonably well. The notification stuff that it does for Facebook message, Twitter messages, all that stuff is pretty good. I don't like their stock mail client. I think it kind of sucks. But the rest of it's quite good. It's an impressive phone. So Matt, you're a Nexus One user, right?
Yep.
What do you think about? Of course, Nexus One being an official Google phone has the stock Google experience. Have you used any Android phones that have custom UIs?
I played around with the Galaxy S or the Captivate or whatever you want to call it, and I wasn't a huge fan of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's only lightly skinned, I guess, but I mean, it's just still a little too much for my liking. I guess, you know, as someone who's just used stock Android for so long, anything else kind of just gets on my nerves.
I mean, I understand why we had these custom UIs in the early days of Android when HTC was the only one making phones and stock Android was kind of shitty and there were no widgets and you couldn't really do anything with the phone. It just doesn't make sense to me anymore. You just installed Gingerbread on your Nexus, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm running CyanogenMod 7 now, one of the release candidates.
I mean, do you feel like there's anything – like you don't have enough widgets with stock Android or that you can't access your data fast enough or it's too confusing and to you? I mean, you're a power user clearly, but I mean, do you feel like there's any kind of core problems with the experience running Gingerbread?
I'm one of those weird people who actually, you know, I don't use a lot of widgets. I mean, I have beautiful widgets and I kind of have those peppered throughout. But I mean, most of the stock stuff is fine for me. Things like launcher, because I mean, you've got to remember using CyanogenMod 7, they also have Cyanogen comes with ADW launcher by default. And I always reinstall Launcher Pro instead. And I find that satisfies pretty much everything I need my phone to do. I mean, it gives me access, quick access at the bottom of the screen to everything, you know, from mail to messages to email. And I mean, that's really all I need.
Yeah. Launcher Pro gives you kind of like a iPhone style permanent dock area at the bottom. I always use ADW, but Launcher, right. I use both a little bit, but I prefer ADW as I recall.
There was a reason why I didn't prefer ADW, and I can't remember what it is, to be honest, but I don't know. It's kind of just become a habit now.
I mean, it used to be slow is why I didn't like it at first, but then they released
crashed
something. Yeah, around the Froyo release, they released something that was significantly speedier. But I mean, the point is ADW Launcher Pro are essentially stock Android experiences.
Yeah.
And and the first thing most people are doing, you know, when I posted the story, one of the comments was, you know, the first thing I do when I reinstall my Android phone or I get a new Android phone or whatever is always turn off the shitty, you know, whether it's even HTC Sense these days, they turn off the stock, the custom home screen and replace it with the mimics that are ADW or Launcher Pro. I don't understand why Google doesn't just put their launcher in the marketplace so you can download it and install it on whatever phone you want.
So wait a second. What happens on – because, I mean, I've never actually seen what happens when you install Launcher Pro or ADW on something like the Galaxy or the Captivate. I mean, what happens? Does it essentially look more like a stock, you know, stock phone, or is it still kind of filled with all of those UI flourishes?
I think you can still run the widgets from Launcher TouchWiz or whatever.
Right.
But the main experience is exactly the same as ADW is. So the wallpaper manager, all the menu that pops up when you press the menu button on the home screen, the background, if the like TouchWiz changes the app tray. So instead of being a vertical scroll, it scrolls side to side like the iPhone, which makes no sense at all. It replaces that. And if you set Launcher Pro or ADW to be the default, then it will come back the next time you reboot and it won't even load the whatever the manufacturer's home screen is.
Moto Blur doesn't force you to use their widgets, does it?
You can use their widgets. I think you can use other widgets as well. It depends on at least with the version that's on the Atrix. I left it sitting on my desk, so I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately.
That's okay.
Also kind of fortunately. So so I mean, yeah, it's been a big Android. It's been a good week for Android, actually, I would say. I'd say this is for a long time, I've been saying, you know, I'm kind of waiting for real hardware and real software to come for Android. And definitely, it seems like with the Zoom, this is that week. And
well, it's not so much Motorola, but more of the ARM cores actually getting to a point where they're more power than the OS needs.
Yeah, but what's going to happen next week when Apple announces an iPad with a dual core A5?
It's fine. Then the iPad will run even better. Right. There are things the iPad actually – a better processor on the iPad is nice, and sure, you'll be able to run better graphics and you know, more power-consuming apps, but it's really the RAM that needs to be upgraded.
Yeah, I mean, double. I would love to have 2 gigs of RAM in that, even though I know it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. I mean, we have, what, 256 on this right now? It's not pretty. Or 500?
It's and 512, yeah.
512, and the iPhone is 700, and you know, the Zoom is 1,000.
Is that right?
1 gig.
Yeah. I think it might be 256. You know, yeah, 3GS was 256, and iPad was bigger. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to not put enough RAM in these machines, especially when you're looking at the amount of memory usage. Like, if you open up a Chrome browser, look at the amount of memory being used on just any given tab. I mean, it's insane. And
that's like 30, 40 megs.
Yeah, easy. So with oh shit. Anyway, it's like 30 or 40 megs. I mean, I just don't understand why you don't. RAM is cheap. Put more RAM on.
Yeah.
Question for you guys then. I mean, I'm holding an iPad right now. I actually borrowed one and I've had it for the past week. And I'm wondering where does that sort of RAM deficiency crop up? Because I mean, I've been using a lot of news apps. I've been doing some light browsing, but I haven't really
try
run
opening
into an
two
issue
tabs.
Or,
yeah,
open sorry? Pages. Open yeah. more than one page and swap between the pages.
We'll wait. Take your time.
Browser. I didn't actually hear a word of that.
Oh, okay. Go to a browser, open a new page, and have two tabs. That's it.
Yeah.
There goes your limitation. Try going back and forth between two tabs.
So it doesn't save the tabs. It saves the tab. It bookmarks essentially rather than saving the state necessarily. So it has to reload the page and redraw it
time. And that's not the way people browse. And the point of tabs and the way a modern person browses is you're reading a document and then you open a link in the background and that's the tab. And then when you're, you know, or you can check it out and then you go back to the original document, you don't want to reload it.
So if I were to load up Tested Chat in a tab and then switch to another tab, when I come back, Tested Chat has to reload.
Yep, absolutely.
Seems like it, yeah.
Yep.
And also when you load along a big page with lots of images or video or whatever, then you get the checkerboard effect as it redraws.
Yes.
The Zoom does that too. It seems to be a little less common. just from some incredibly informal testing over the last 6 or 7 hours. So yeah, I mean, Motorola had a good week. Android had a good week. I think that this marks the start of the coming out party for Android as a real contender. I worry that people who bought first generation Android phones might not stay on board, especially when presented with the option of a Verizon iPhone.
Which isn't selling so well.
What do you mean by first generation Android phone, though? What are we classifying that as?
Well, I'm talking about from the Droid until the Galaxy S, probably, is what I would say.
No, I'd say first generation
pre-Froyo,
what
maybe
people call super phones is 1 gigahertz, or I guess the Droid was 800 megahertz. So
yeah,
Droid was like the first Android super phone, and 2.0, 2.1, that going forward. I think a lot of people are waiting for something like a big jump. I know people who have the Droid 1 right now who are just waiting for like an Atrix or a Thunderbolt. People who bought the Nexus 1 are still probably pretty happy. They're going to leapfrog over.
I mean, if you look at it, the current – basically all of the Android hardware that came out since the Droid is more or less the same. I mean, there's differences in screen, differences in camera, differences – different spins of the same generation of CPU architecture. But there's no big jump from one architecture to another. The dual core jump marks the first major shift in Android hardware since the Droid, I think.
Keep in mind, though, I mean, things are really weird up here because, I mean, people who bought Droids in Canada have only had them for just over a year. And I'm talking original Droids.
Wow.
Droid came out in November of 2009.
Yeah. We didn't get it until the end of January, maybe February.
So like 3 months behind. And that's that. By then, a bunch of people had the Nexus One. Exactly.
Right. But I mean, a lot of people are on, at least in the U.S., if your phone bills more than a certain amount, typically you can upgrade every 18 months instead of every 2 years, or even every year instead of 2 years.
The other thing is that the advancement in ARM technology is going so fast.
Yeah.
Already talks of quad core ARM, that phone, people are just going to cram these into the phones, whether they need them or not. And then that's going to give app developers an excuse to create fancy apps. And so you have like apps that require a Tegra processor because it needs all that graphics power. And
ultimately
on Nexus Ones and other, quote unquote, old Android phones that came out 6 months ago, they can't use it. They can't play it.
Yeah, but I mean that's kind of the. I mean, if you're an old PC guy like I am, and you map this to the history of the PC, I think we're in the Windows 98 era now, right? I mean, with phones, we're just getting to the point where a lot of people are building hardware for this. It's becoming it's becoming mainstream. There's a lot of attention. There's a lot of development happening.
It's very dangerous fragmentation. I mean,
yeah.
Even on iOS, if you go to the market and you look at Infinity Blade, you go to the. The App Store, you look at the sidebar, it says you have to have, a third gen iPod Touch or newer, or, iPhone 3GS or newer.
Well, there's a lot of people that feel really burned if they have an iPhone 3G that's less than 2 years old.
Exactly. But then if you're on the Android, if you have something like, oh, I can't play, this dungeon game, or I can't play the football game unless I have a device that's 1 month or newer, right? 1 month old or newer. And then with the PlayStation stuff, the PlayStation phone stuff, Xperia, you're gonna need it's not based on the version of Android you have, or the chip you have, it's software.
Well, and hardware too,
and a combination of software and hardware. So it's a lot of checkboxes.
Yeah, this is a problem that Microsoft has talked about for years with regard to PC gaming, in that how do you communicate what system requirements are to somebody who doesn't understand what system requirements are.
And you need a PC with Windows level 4.8.
Right. And that was a spectacular failure. So, I mean, it's a challenging time for Android. I mean, this is – I know they've moved an incredible number of units, but really we don't know how happy people are with their first-generation Android phones until they start buying a second wave of Android phones.
I think the people who are happy with their first-gen Android phones, they're really just using, Facebook, Twitter – and those apps don't
really
do anything.
Well, that's probably true.
So, yeah. I mean, we're talking about the extremes. People who want just the cutting edge. They want like 3D Angry Birds.
Well, and for them, Angry Birds. For them, Android is the place to be. I mean, the cutting edge is clearly on Android. And I can say that because Gary, just so in case people are wondering, Gary's off for a couple of weeks working on a secret project and also raising money for the Forgotten Harvest Charity in Detroit. Check out the Twitter hashtag RoboCharity, right?
Yeah, it's got to be a scam.
You think so?
Charity. He's building his own RoboCop statue.
You think we're going to go to Gary's house next time and there's going to be a giant RoboCop statue in his living room?
That's RoboCharity.
I don't know. I think they said that they've raised enough money to pay for like 15,000 meals or something since since he started this last week. One of his buddies said, hey, it's stupid to have a RoboCop statue when there's millions of hungry people in Detroit. So,
and so both of them put $50 in.
Yeah, exactly. And with $100, they started a wave of feeding. So props to Gary for that. We'll see him back. Don't think he'll be back next week, but maybe the week after. So we'll revisit the Zoom and other stuff that happens between now and then when he's returned. Speaking of Apple stuff, new MacBooks today.
Yeah.
New MacBook Pros. I think MacBooks are gone. I think we've seen the last new MacBooks we're ever going to see.
There are reports that people. I mean, you know, not to sound sexist or anything, but there have been reports that MacBooks do very well with women
because of their plastic,
because of the colors and plastic.
Okay.
It just market research.
Okay.
So I don't think they would get rid of them completely.
I think they're going to make MacBook Airs in colors.
That's the worst idea ever.
That metal.
How long do you think the brushed aluminum look is has for the rest of the world? How long do you think they change?
I think until Dell or HP start shipping brushed aluminum machines.
Well, they did.
I think really. We got Dama. Sick of that after the iPods.
The Dama was brushed aluminum.
I guess
it was brushed aluminum and it was like black.
Plastic, yeah. I think Apple has invested pretty heavily in the single body construction. I mean, I think that they're pretty far down that path, and I think that the next thing will be for them to figure out some way to color the metal or add different texture or something like that. I mean, the nice thing about it is it holds up really well. I mean, I've beaten the shit out of my MacBook, and it looks
– Well, MacBook Pro.
MacBook Pro. It doesn't look new, but it looks good still, I think. I mean,
yeah.
And I don't feel like if I give it a good drop, I don't really feel that worried about it.
So let's talk about the new MacBook.
Yeah, new MacBooks.
So as expected, we got Sandy Bridge.
Yes.
And I think the prices go up, or
it's difficult to say because you know there's like a price curve on Mac laptops sometimes. So they'll be expensive at the beginning, and then like 3 months later, there'll be a little bit of a price drop that's kind of secret, and then they get gradually cheaper over the life of the product. But there's a couple of big things in these new laptops. Sandy Bridge, of course, which we've talked about on the podcast before, but it's basically Sandy Bridge is a CPU and graphics on a single die. It's power efficient.
Well, it has the option to be.
Yeah.
You don't have to have graphics and.
I think the graphics are there. They can use them or not.
Well, on the desktop chips,
yeah.
some of them actually don't have the option for graphics.
Okay, fair enough.
But it is second generation Core technology, so it's a refinement of Nehalem, and it's a pretty big jump, I think. But the previous MacBook Pros were on at least Core technology,
except for the 13 inch. The 13 inch was Core 2 Quad or Core 2 Duo.
So your 13 inch is a Core 2 Duo, right?
Right. So if you have a 13 inch MacBook Pro, moving to a dual core. Sandy Bridge should be a pretty substantial improvement, even though you're not seeing any more cores and you're running at more or less the same clock speed.
Yeah, it's like 2.3 gigahertz versus 2.4 for the base.
Yeah, I think mine's 2.5, but I can't remember.
2.4.
Probably. I have a 2009 model though. Yeah, 2.5.
2.53, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and we don't have one on hand to do tests. I don't know that we're going to buy one, and Apple doesn't send us review units, so I don't think we're going to cover
them. Man, I was excited for this, and I think people who are waiting a long time for the refresh, because people who are looking to buy Macs, you know, they wait for the day they're announced, and that's usually when they're in.
That's when to buy them,
and that's the earliest you're going to be ahead of the curve, and then every day after that, you're just you're more outdated. But it's not so hot because yes, Sandy Bridge is nice, and we'll get to like the light peak and Thunderbolt stuff in just a second, but the screen is still 1280x800.
Yeah, it's not
really
it's
the 13 or the 15?
The 13 inch,
which is crazy because the MacBook Air, the 11-inch MacBook Air, is a higher resolution than that.
Yeah, so the resolution is the same across from the old models to today's new models. On 13 inches, 1280x800, which, if you recall from earlier, is the same resolution as the Motorola Zoom. And then the 15 inch is 1440x900, which is the same resolution as the 13 inch MacBook Air, and the last gen 15-inch MacBook Pro.
So the one thing I would say is that if they're sticking with the IPS screens on the MacBook Pros, the MacBook Air, definitely the screen on the MacBook Air is nowhere near as good as the like quality black reproduction, all that stuff, as the screen on the MacBook Pros has been. But I mean, it still seems a little it seems a little crazy not to up the resolution on that to just some. I mean, I guess if given the choice between an IPS screen and a higher resolution, I would take the IPS screen probably, at least on the 15-inch and the 17-inch. The 13-inch more screen space would be pretty nice, though, as somebody who uses a 13-inch every day. I think my next laptop is going to be an Air, though, I think, at this point. I think I'm just going to get an Air and get a desktop or a Mac Mini or something.
Yeah, that's what I've been telling people to do. Wait for the next the Guts update to the Air.
Do you still think that's going to be in April? That's crazy.
June. I think it's going to be in June.
Really?
Yeah, I think the MacBook Air is going to get Sandy Bridge dual core. I don't know if it's going to be clocked at 2.3. Maybe clocked.
It'll be clocked
lower.
Way down. It'll be clocked like 1.4, 1.5.
Yeah, 1.6.
When was the last one? Was the last one WWDC as well?
No, the last one was in August or something.
The last one was like, I want to say October.
It was in the fall.
It's definitely in the fall. Oh, and wow. I think, you know, wait 6 months. It's perfect timing.
It was kind of a surprise. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think the move to Sandy Bridge is really good. I think there's some power improvements for Sandy Bridge as well that we haven't really talked about because we focused on desktop stuff before. This isn't a real – I mean, the thing is, I don't think we're going to see any real exciting CPU enhancements for a while. I mean, I think Intel – this Sandy Bridge is the talk to the tick. You know, the tick is the big upgrade for Intel and the talk
No. The tick is the other small way around. Upgrade. The talk is the big upgrade. Ticks are always small.
So is that how you remember that?
Yep. Ticks. You know, okay. The clock does a tick and then the big talk.
Oh, I thought you meant the little bugs.
No.
Okay.
And then also, Apple changed the GPU on all the models of the MacBook Pro. So yeah, on the 13-inch, it's no longer using the GeForce 320M. It's using the Sandy Bridge built-in Intel HD Graphics 3000. Has a little bit more RAM, but technically it is – I mean, you're not going to be able to play real games on either, but people are not so happy with it.
I mean, that's really interesting because there had been a lot of talk that it might be AMD this go-round since AMD is kind of winning the mobile graphics war.
Well, it is AMD.
Oh, it is AMD.
It's AMD on the 15-inch and on the 17-inch.
Oh. Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
On the 15-inch AMD HD 6490 with 256 megs of GDDR5, or you can upgrade to the 6750. And then on the 17-inch, it's just the 6750 with a gig of GPU. And that's why actually across all the models, the prices are cheaper or the same. The 13-inch starts at, I think, like $80 cheaper than the last gen. But on the 17-inch, it starts at $200 more.
And it seems like it's exactly the same chassis. Everything's the same size. Everything's the same weight. SSDs are an option on all of them. I think 4 gigs is the new standard memory configuration. Yep. It used to be 2, which makes a lot more sense to me.
Thank goodness. Yeah. I don't know how you can get by on 2 gigs on a Mac. Mac uses up so much RAM.
Well, I mean,
I'm surprised there's still an 8 gig limit.
I think it's because of the number. I think it's because you can't get bigger than 4 gig SODIMs. I think it's a SODIM problem.
Or at that price.
Yeah, at a price that they're willing to pay. I mean, if you look at SODIM prices, they get crazy expensive when you get up above 4 gigs.
Yeah.
So the battery, I mean, battery life claims, I don't care about this.
It's just about the same.
Yeah, they've changed the way they measure a little bit. The price has gone down on this stuff, though. The 13-inch, I think, was maybe that's about right. I guess it was $1,500 when I got this one. Anyway, so that's new Macs. The exciting thing about the new MacBooks, though, which I went and took a briefing on this morning, kind of surprised because it didn't sound real sexy when I was reading the press release. And when I actually got to thinking about it, then it made a lot more sense. But what used to be called Lightpeak, I think we talked about this around IDF last year in the summer, springtime.
Look, there were like murmurs of it like all last year, because last year was supposed to be USB 3.0's big coming out year. Finally, we're going to have USB 3.0 adapters. USB 3.0 was making its way into motherboards, not Intel motherboards, but like MSI and ASUS motherboards. And there were USB 3.0 hard drives. And
Do you have any USB 3.0 devices?
I have ports, but I have no drives.
Yeah, I have ports and no drives too.
Because the drives are actually kind of expensive. But USB 3.0 really didn't take off, and people were wondering, you know, what's going to be the catalyst to help it take off? Well, the catalyst would be Intel actually making USB 3.0 standard in its chipsets.
So somebody asked that this morning at this event with Intel, and there was a rousing no comment on future chipset designs. So
So
no clarity there. This isn't the Lightpeak slash Thunderbolt, though, isn't a USB replacement.
No, it is not a USB replacement. It is a standard, a port standard that started off as just being optical. And that's that's where those high res images of the crazy like optical cables on the chipsets.
Like a replacement for not fiber channel. But yeah, fiber channel.
Yeah, but I don't think they could get people on board for that, or manufacturing was too hard.
Well, what they said was OEMs, people who make PC motherboards are really, really cost conscious to the point that if they can add a feature and it costs 35 cents, then that's a hard decision. Because, you know, they make millions and millions of motherboards, 35 cents times a million motherboards is real money.
Any manufacturer will tell you if the cost for them to add a feature is 35 cents, they have to add a dollar to the retail price.
Right.
Because it adds up.
So so nobody wanted to put optical connectors on the board and these optical ports because it'd be too expensive. And it's a new part, so everything's expensive and all that. So they went back to the drawing board, worked with Apple, and came up with this an electrical version of Lightpeak. They've changed the name to Thunderbolt. I think that's the Intel name, but Apple is using it as well. And what it is basically is a cable that looks essentially like a mini DisplayPort connector, and you run it. It's backwards compatible with DisplayPort. Maybe they may be mini and full size. That was unclear. They didn't have a whole lot of cables on hand at this thing this morning. But basically, what it is it's a it takes a PCI Express by 4 channel or 2x2 channels, depending on how you look at it, and packs that with a DisplayPort channel in one cable, and it's daisy chainable. So the use case is I have a laptop and I'm a video editor. Laptop storage isn't fast enough to do high def video, or if you put like an SSD or something in like that, then you don't have enough space to deal with uncompressed high def video. So what you do is you sit down at your desk, you plug this guy into your laptop, and you plug a giant 4 or 6 disc RAID cage into this Thunderbolt connector. And you get 10 gigabits a second throughput per channel that's bidirectionally.
10 gigabits is the optical.
No, that's this.
That's copper?
The electrical version as well. Mm. Yeah. So there's 2 channels per cable. Each channel is capable of 10 gigabits in each direction simultaneously. So it's fully bidirectional. And the DisplayPort works in there. Magically, the DisplayPort is carried across there as well. So basically what it is it's external PCI Express. In a really simple term. So like in a traditional system, when you plug in, say, eSATA or something like that, you have a SATA controller that plugs into the PCI Express bus. With this, you have a Thunderbolt controller that plugs directly into the PCI Express bus, and it takes a DisplayPort compatible feed from a discrete or an integrated graphics solution and that comes across the PCI Express bus and pipes that out of the machine and lets you connect to other devices at a much, much faster throughput than you're able to already. So to put it in perspective, FireWire 800 is 800 gigabits a second. That's pretty much the fastest thing that anybody uses right now. I think USB 3.0 is comparable. I can't remember the exact numbers on 800 that.
800 megabits
per second.
Megabits.
Sorry. Yeah, not gigabits.
That would be 100 gigabytes.
So it's 0.8 gigabits a second.
Yes.
This is 10 gigabits a second times 2.
At theoretical max.
Bidirectionally. I saw sitting in this event today, I saw it running at 650 megabytes per second was where it peaked. Multiply that by 8 to get, I think it was 5 gigabits a second. Yeah.
In layman's terms, the breakdown of what kind of hardware you need. So assuming I just bought a new MacBook Pro.
It has the
controller built in. It has, the lightning bolt on the side of the port.
Yes.
It looks like a display port.
Yes.
I need a cable.
You need a special cable. Normal DisplayPort cable won't do it.
Exactly.
You need a device that works with it.
For example, I need a RAID hard drive, like a NAS box.
So
hard drive.
They announced some storage partners, including LaCie, Western Digital, and Promise.
Okay.
And showed a 4-disc, like a Promise RAID cage that is basically a box that is a RAID, that does RAID inside the box, and then it hands you a storage volume externally.
And then, well, those devices also need to be powered. Because there's very little power that goes over this cable.
Well, so this cable carries 10 watts of power, which I don't know. I can't do the – I don't know what the voltage was, so I can't convert it to amps in my head. But it's basically – anyway, I'm not going to try to do that. They said you could power a relatively small hard drive, like a portable hard drive, something like that, in an enclosure, I would assume that the like a RAID cage or something like that with multiple drives is going to need its own source of power because they're going to draw more than 10 watts.
Not only do you need the external drives to be fast, your internal drives have to be fast too, because otherwise, I mean, how fast does a hard drive read?
No, your the drives inside the RAID cage, you mean. The drives inside the laptop don't matter. You're working – essentially what you're getting is a machine plugging your drives directly into your PCI Express bus. So, you know, if you're – it's the closest thing I could say if you put a big RAID array is that if you have like a storage area network or something like that, if you're dealing with uncompressed high-def video, you have to have something that includes a whole shitload of hard drives and a really fast connection between the computer and those drives. So one of the things they demoed today was four uncompressed 1080p videos running off of this and then rendering the output video back out to a display port, Cinema Display. So basically on the devices, each device is going to have two ports, an in port and an out port, similar to FireWire. The last device on the chain can be a legacy PCI, legacy DisplayPort device. They'll just work in this port as without any change. So if you have a MacBook, you have a DisplayPort Cinema Display.
So it goes from MacBook to the rated
Thunderbolt stuff.
Thunderbolt stuff, yeah. And at the very end, your display.
You can plug in a display.
Yeah.
And it seems like if you have Thunderbolt compatible displays, you can just keep plugging in more displays until you run out of frame buffer.
What about like GPUs? Because it's plugged right into PCIe.
So I specifically asked that question because I was really curious about that. If this is going to work with ATI and NVIDIA GPUs, or if it's just going to work with Intel stuff, because you know workstations all have. Generally have real graphics cards. You don't do integrated graphics in a workstation because you need 3D acceleration for a lot of stuff workstation people use. Basically, what they said is if your video card is DisplayPort compliant, part of that means that you can pipe the signal that would go out to your monitor back through the card into the PCI Express bus, and then from there it can go out the Thunderbolt controller to your DisplayPort monitor just like anything else. So you would have a video card in your machine, but it wouldn't actually be connected to a monitor necessarily.
Well, I'm also talking about like external video cards. Like if I had an external video card with Thunderbolt controller connector going into your machine, onto the motherboard, and then coming back out to another monitor?
I would assume so, yeah. In theory, that should work. I asked about external video cards. They said they didn't have anything to talk about there. The total throughput across this whole connector is about the same as a 4x PCI Express channel. So, you know, the big PCI Express channel that you have that you plug X16. Your video card into is by 16.
Yeah.
The little tiny ones X2, that are really short X1. Are X2 or X1. So this is somewhere – it's twice as fast as the little tiny one, a quarter the speed of the great big one.
Yeah. And I can see this being used in like HD cameras and you know, having these in – camcorders.
Yeah, I mean, earlier today, literally, we after we did that live stream of the Zoom, before we could put it on the site, Anna had to copy it off of the camera, and that took like 25 or 30 minutes over FireWire. Yes. Over this, it would take tenth, like something
minutes.
Like that. Yeah, a few minutes. Literally,
yeah, but keep in mind, part of that is also due to the media itself being used in like cameras and stuff. So I mean, like, while it makes sense in RAID arrays.
Yeah, the
I P2 like
card, the flash memory isn't going to be as fast.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I'm sputtering here, but it's the upshot of this whole thing is that while you'll be able to go out and buy a RAID array for not too much money in the not too distant future, the biggest use for this is going to be in pro setups.
Yeah.
So
the latency also very low.
Yeah, 8 nanoseconds, I think they said, across the electrical connection and lower across the optical connections. So like Avid and a lot of the companies that make kind of pro editing bays and audio solutions, especially the audio folks are very excited about this because 8 nanoseconds latency when you're dealing with like a massive multi-track recording studio type situation is apparently really exciting. I don't know anything about that stuff, but.
Intel had to partner with Apple for this port, to develop this port. Apple has like an exclusive on it. So we're not going to actually see.
Is that true though?
I think
they said it's available to other people.
I think Apple has an
I read online. Almost positive they don't have exclusive.
Have exclusive?
No, it's available. They said they haven't announced any of their partnerships, but Intel is willing to sell the controller to anybody.
Apple Insider says Intel details Thunderbolt as exclusive until 2012.
That is not what they said today in this meeting.
Mm. Yeah, according to Intel PR, I'm reading, apparently other OEMs can produce devices whenever they want.
Yeah, so
I'm talking about controllers, like actual like have having it in MSI laptops and Dell laptops.
So what they told me this morning when I – because I asked if what the IP situation is with this. You know, because one of the reasons FireWire never took off is that Intel actually owned a whole lot of patents. So if you wanted to implement FireWire on your own, even though it's kind of an open spec, you still had to pay royalties to Intel in order to or Apple, like, rather.
So the clarification is they had a year head start in development.
Right, because they've been working closely with Intel to make the electrical connector. There's nothing stopping Lenovo or MSI or whoever from buying these controllers off the shelf, plugging them into their motherboard designs.
Thank you, misleading headlines. Next
week. Yeah, well, you know, Apple Insider. I usually like Apple Insider. I shouldn't talk shit about them. So yeah, that's Thunderbolt. So it will be coming to all other devices. I would expect that we'll see add-in cards and things like that, so that if you have a Mac Pro or a PC workstation or whatever, you can add this if you feel like you need that kind of bandwidth.
And what does this mean for USB 3 as a standard?
I don't think it means anything for USB 3. I mean, this is a different kind of connector than USB 3 is. You don't need a PCI Express connection, a PCI Express speed.
Yeah.
For USB 3.
That's the thing. Like, I don't see this. Like, you're not going to go buy a Western Digital Passport drive and connect it with Lightpeak because you're not going to get 10 gigabits of bandwidth anyway, no matter what.
The Passport drives
on RPM drive.
A 2.25 inch, a 2.5 inch one.
Exactly. And USB 3 is going to tap that out.
Yeah, I think USB is a consumer standard. It's something that people are familiar with. It's backwards compatible. You can plug it into anything.
It's cool that Lightpeak is DisplayPort compatible, and so it's not just like FireWire. Some people use, like professionals use, but other people, like, I have no use for that ever. But you know, if this is also DisplayPort, I can use it as a TV.
The last time I used a FireWire port was probably in 2003. So, Lightpeak's kind of exciting. It's very Mac-y right now, but it'll be more PC.
Oh, I could so imagine Apple pulling June refresh for the MacBook Air. Without Lightpeak, but with Sandy Bridge.
I can see
that. And so, like, oh, you're getting Sandy Bridge. It's a big update. Now it's time to buy, but no Lightpeak yet.
Well, the thing about Lightpeak makes the MacBook Air super duper sexy. Because, I mean, the big problem with the MacBook Air.
All the right things coming together.
64 gigs of SSD. I don't want that when I'm working at the desk. I need a big hard drive here at the office. If I can put my MacBook on the desk, plug in the DisplayPort controller, hook it up to a external storage or RAID array or whatever, and the monitor at the same time.
The monitor, yep.
Yeah, that is super hot.
With one cable to your storage and
hell yeah. Monitor. Well, daisy chain, two cables.
Yes. Well, one at the end point.
One plug. Yep. Yeah. I mean, that's super hot. I imagine a world.
And then also with, you know, we assume that new MacBook Air will have the Intel integrated graphics, which can at least run WoW.
Wow.
And Portal 2.
I wouldn't go that far.
If they're
run it. It will not crash the desktop.
Okay, some other news this week. Amazon Prime.
This is also rumored and leaked before the official announcement, but it's real. If you have an Amazon Prime account, you can get access to about 5,000 movies from the video on demand service. For free. It's a bonus. I mean, Amazon Prime is a great value by itself anyway. If you order, you know, more than 20 things a month.
Dude, I order toilet paper from Amazon now.
Yeah,
I have
free two-day shipping. It's free with a subscription.
Once you get Prime, like there's a weird calculus that happens about like going to the grocery store or Target to get shit versus waiting until the day after tomorrow to get it. So you're like, man, my wife's out of town. I'm looking at that half roll of toilet paper left, thinking, I can last 2 days. I'll make it. That's good. Fish food, yeah. Amazon Prime. Chloe, you need your nails clipped. Let's get a nail clipper. Amazon Prime.
Wow.
Do you guys have Prime in Canada?
I'm almost positive we don't. I'm sitting here listening to this, going, my God, this is a thing.
So
you can do this.
So for our international listeners, Prime is. Prime is basically like I think Prime is the first step toward the Wall-ification of America. Basically, you pay $75 or $80 or something like that a year, and you get free 2-day shipping on everything. So this works for Amazon because they have data, they have shipment centers everywhere. So probably even if they shipped it ground to major urban areas, it's going to get there in a day or two anyway. So this is just them working their massive scale mojo with UPS or FedEx or whoever. To deliver stuff more quickly. So now you get streaming video as well. Although I'm not that excited about streaming video without hardware players. And I don't think that this free video works with the existing Amazon Video On Demand infrastructure yet, does it?
I don't know if you can watch on Android, but you cannot watch it on
like TiVo or, yeah, or Roku or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think that's tied in directly. I'm not exactly sure. And also, it only works for certain Prime subscriptions. Like, for example, student Prime subscriptions,
oh, right,
where they got the 1 year free, that will not
that
give you
work.
The free video on demand.
If
I'm
you're
not
the guest,
exactly sure if you're the guest of that.
No, it doesn't work if you're the guest. So
that's, I had my friends who I charged $20 a year.
Wow, you
a
are.
Account.
I give my sister and parents
they're,
free
they are
access.
Not family. They are friends, and we split my Amazon Prime account.
Should I charge Gina?
Well, that's family.
Okay.
And my friends use a lot more than I do, but
okay.
I charge four friends $20 a month. That pays for mine.
$20 a month?
A year.
Oh, my God.
Year.
I was going to say, $20
a
your
year.
Friends are idiots.
I am the host. Sometimes, some years, some friends don't renew, so it's all right. Some still pay most of it. But, yeah, they don't have access to the video on demand.
Do you put out Craigslist ads?
No.
Yeah, I got $20 for Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. I don't know if that's the most exciting news.
No, it is interesting in that Amazon did the right thing in bundling this as a value add for people with Prime memberships. It makes Prime subscriptions that much more appealing just because the selection for the video on demand that's free with this, it's not great.
Thin.
I mean, it's not great, but it's also not bad. They don't have as many episodes and movies, but there's a good selection. It's not the latest stuff. It's more the archive.
It's a lot of
library.
Catalog, yeah.
Yeah, catalog video. But it's nice for some people who either don't have Netflix and have Prime and want to try video on demand. Also, it really gives them incentive then because they have this big user base to test out new video on demand,
yeah,
software. And so they can say, you have it. It's part of your account. Why don't you try out a new piece of software, try out this, try out that, and then eventually – find a way to compete with Netflix.
So, yeah, I mean, the thing about the videos is I went down the list and I was like, I'd watch Clockwork Orange. I like Man on Wire. I'd watch One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I mean, it's who doesn't want to watch Interview with the Vampire?
Or
me.
Or
Food Inc. I'm looking at the list now. Charlie's Angels. I mean, damn. It's like real movies. It's not like when Netflix Instant Streaming started, it was kind of a bunch of documentaries and it wasn't it was just this thin.
It comes down to both, one, the software, which Netflix has obviously a clear advantage on right now, and also just the backroom the deals.
Yeah, the deals.
Make. Yeah,
and Amazon can get a lot of deals because they move a lot of product.
They move a lot of product. They can go to Paramount Home Video and say, you want your item to be your DVDs and your Blu-rays to be recommended and give us access to your library. But Netflix actually just announced a deal with CBS, a 2-year licensing agreement. So now we have Hawaii Five-O and Star Trek on Netflix.
But it's only selected episodes of Star Trek. But I want to say, I think that, you know how when Seam launched and you were like, oh, okay, cheat protection, that's kind of cool. And nobody realized what they were going to do with that content delivery service.
Everyone hated Steam when it first launched.
Right.
Everyone's like, what? You have to be connected online to play Half-Life 2?
I am
angry.
I think that this Amazon deal is going to be one of those things that we look back on 3 or 4 years from now. We're like, oh, yeah, okay. Turns out that was a pretty big deal. So, I call it. It's going to be a big deal. You were going to say you were saying about the Netflix CBS stuff. I went through and looked at the Star Trek library last night, and it's missing episodes.
That's not
really
good.
It's a select
episode. Is it the same stuff that you can get for free on like the CBS
it's more
website?
It seems like more than that, but I'm not really super familiar with what's free on the CBS website.
At least you guys have it.
That's true.
Yeah.
But they have like City on the Edge of Forever and it's like key episodes. They had Tomorrow's Enterprise or yesterday's Enterprise
series.
All sorts of stuff like that. So, I mean, that's pretty exciting. Netflix paid a boatload of money for that deal. It was a couple hundred million dollars.
It was a lot. But then they just have a bigger repository. I mean, people who have Netflix will want to watch those shows.
Yeah. Windows SP1?
Let's actually jump back to MacBook Pros. Notice that the FaceTime is actually now an app that you have to buy separately.
Oh, really?
On MacBook Pros, I think.
Is it in the App Store?
I think it's in the.
This will be the third time I've gone to the App Store. This is very exciting. Dun dun dun.
Yeah, and also they changed the name of the camera. It's not now no longer the iChat camera. It's the FaceTime.
Oh man, it's 99 cents,
and you have to pay 99 cents for the FaceTime app.
Fuck that!
Wow.
I'm not paying 99 cents.
Why would you do that if we anticipate next week that they're going to announce new iPads with a camera, front-facing camera, because you want, you know, bigger FaceTime user base, and then now say, hey, everyone who just bought a new MacBook Pro, pay money if you want to use FaceTime. That's not how you get people to adopt the
app right now.
Oh, my God.
Well, of course. So the number one review is free the apps. I wish – John Patton says, I wish Apple would stop trying to nickel and dime its customers' tests. This is exactly how Apple built its market on the PC – on the back of PCs. I had bad enough to pay another $3,000 for the new laptop, but charging 99 cents for some silly little connectivity app that should be part of the standard build is really annoying. I think that sums up how I feel. I mean, that's pretty much it. And then there's like 300 people drinking Kool-Aid underneath there. It works. I don't like the fact that it's a paid app, but I love it. Five stars.
Swimming in the Kool-Aid.
Works
swimming.
Wonderfully. It is very easy
having
to
conversations.
Use. I don't understand
FaceTime each other
why I had
Kool-Aid
to pay for it, but it's only a buck. And I paid $3,000 for my new MacBook. Yeah, I mean, this seems like a ripoff. I wonder if it comes – does it come included on the new MacBooks?
I don't think it comes included.
Oh, that's
– wow.
Thumbs that's... down, Apple.
don't quote me on that. I'm not sure, but I wouldn't put it past them.
Windows 7 SP1? That's pretty
exciting.
Yeah,
that's actually pushed
finally
out. My computer automatically restarted last night, so
– oh, so you've been SP1'd?
I think I've been SP1'd.
My computer restarted at home too. Maybe I've been SP1'd as well.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I like to choose when I install my SPs. Yep. Oh, this one seems like this is the least sexy service pack ever.
This is nothing notable.
Since actually, Windows XP SP1.
Yeah, I actually have heard some people had problems after SP1 was installed. I think Lloyd Case tweeted that.
There's always somebody that has problems after service packs. That's the way it is.
But it's not mandatory.
It's optional.
It's just a Windows update.
Or recommended.
Recommended.
Okay. Well, if it's I think I have mine set to install recommended though too. Anyway, so it's mostly just a bunch of bug fixes. It's not anything like there's no major features, nothing. It's actually a service pack, a roll up of all the security updates and bug fixes that have come out over the last, what, year and a half, 2 years now?
Yeah. So if you're going to buy like a OEM Windows 7 DVD, you know, wait till the SP1 version's out.
Yeah.
Save yourself half an hour of updates.
Yep. iPad 2 event next Thursday.
Next Wednesday.
Wednesday.
March 2nd.
Sorry, Wednesday.
Yeah. There was a huge little bit of a drama about the announcement.
Really?
Because sites had reported that iPad 2 production would be delayed till the summer, and Apple stock actually went down on those rumors.
Oh boy. Is this the Gruber thing? The dual release?
And then the dual release, I think, is still going to happen. We can talk about it later. But the rumors were, you know, what HP touchpad's going to come out in April, which and Zoom's come out this Thursday. But iPad 2 might be pushed to, you know, closer to summer. Apple stock goes down. And then both Carl Swisher and I think Jim
Douglas.
What's his name? No. Oh. Also D.
Doesn't matter.
The guy's name. But two people who in the past have been close to Apple in terms of press coverage.
Sources close to Apple.
They release stories saying, hey, guess what? There's going to be an event, exclusive event. March 2nd. This is before the invites went out.
Nice.
And then some people called foul about having both Swisher and the other guy having
it's nice when reporters
access.
Do your PR for you.
Yeah. Have PR, you know, PR people nudging them. And then so there was a little bit of
on the other hand,
blow up on the internet.
If Apple says, hey, we're going to have a thing 2 weeks from Thursday, to me, I'm going to post that. I mean, we get a lot of traffic on that. That'd be really cool. A lot of people find out about Tested.
But then they'd never talk to you again, as opposed to these people, which
they don't talk to us now. We'd lose nothing.
Okay, I guess.
Yeah.
So March 2nd, they've already, you know, Yerba Buena Center has already been decorated. The invite went out. It clearly is iPad because it's the March 2nd calendar, like, you know, icon, and then peeled back with the iPad in the corner.
Oh my God! It's going to be about iPods.
And
maybe it's a giant iPod Nano.
And then the iPad, actually, the one they used was the Wi-Fi version, so no black bar on top.
Well, the Wi-Fi, the 3G is going to take – well, A, the 3 – well, you're saying they showed the old version.
Yes, and they're in their invitation. I'm reading into it way too much.
I think that they're going to day and date iPads this time. I bet you're going to walk out of Yerba Buena and run to the Apple store to buy an iPad.
I believe that.
Because, I mean, it's not 3G, but the Wi-Fi.
I believe it only because – I don't think the new model is that much different from the old model, so that they would have production shortages. But
that's an interesting point.
The thing that would go against that is that this week before the new MacBook Pros came out, on the website you weren't able to buy a new MacBook Pro. They said you had to wait 5 to 7 days, meaning that if you ordered one you know,
yeah, last Tuesday,
early this week, you would get the new one when the new one shipped.
Interesting.
But I don't think for iPads that's still the case. I think you can still go into a store and buy an iPad. They haven't removed stock. But yeah, new iPad. I think we all expect same resolution screen.
Maybe a little bit bigger, but probably the same.
I think it's the same.
I think they'd have had to do if they're going to change the way they draw apps and to accommodate multiple resolutions, they'll announce that
it would be in the SDK,
so people can change their apps.
Which means that more likely than not, we will see another iPad this year.
iPads are still listed as shipping within 24 hours. So, yeah. So you do think you're in on the two iPad this year theory? What do you think, Matt?
I'm kind of conflicted right now. I mean, I'm looking to buy a tablet this year, and I'm heavily leaning towards iPad.
This year's a good year to buy iPads.
Sorry?
Or it's a good year to buy a tablet.
It's a good year to buy tablets, but I mean, if they're releasing two iPads, then I'm conflicted.
No matter what, even if they only release one iPad this year, don't buy the iPad 2 the day it comes out.
Why is that?
Because you have to wait till the honeycomb gets a little more fine, then you actually have options. Because if I had to choose between, you know, what the tablet world looks like today, next week, 4 months, and 6 months down the line, four different worlds. And even yesterday. So yesterday, buy iPad, right? Today,
no way, dude. Don't buy an iPad. Now they're having an event on Wednesday. Well, that's fucking
if you
crazy.
If you had to buy one, right, iPad's the best one.
Somebody's holding a gun to your head.
Today, you have the Zoom, very compelling. Before. And I think the Zoom is actually, I think, better than the existing iPad 1.
I'm going to spend a lot of time with it this weekend. We'll have a better idea next week. I don't want to prejudge. It is really neat, though.
I think knowing how I use tablets and having the time I've had with the Zoom today.
The time of your life.
And also being able to drag files, music, video, right over USB onto a tablet. Yeah. And on the phone, it's convenient, but I don't really watch videos on my phone.
It behaves more like a computer than a phone. Which
and
is
for
good.
A tablet, that's what you want it to do. The Zoom is much more compelling than the iPad 1 on face, given that the software isn't perfect and the browser is not perfect.
The big thing I'm wondering is what they're going to show, what's coming for iOS for iPad. I mean, I wonder if we're going to see I really think that they need to start thinking about adding a file system or shared file store or something like that, so that they're – because the big shortcoming right now that is constantly plaguing me is and prevents me from using it for work is that you can't move a file from one app to another. So you know, if you open a document in Doc and you want to upload it to Google Docs, you really can't do that. It just doesn't work. And I mean, that is a continual problem. It's even worse when you're trying to edit photos and then upload them to the web or whatever, although the photo store is the exception to that rule. They need to address that. And that's the big competitive advantage Android has, I think, because the apps are slick. I mean, they did a good job tabletizing Android. I think Honeycomb is much more exciting than Android phones are right now, just because it's almost as though with 2.0, 2.1, 2.2, and 2.3, they're definitely refining the OS, the aesthetic that we originally saw in 2.0. But Honeycomb is the first major change to that UI, and it's really good because it needed it. I mean, they were all over the place. Things were really crazy inconsistent, and it seems like they've added a lot of consistency and polish to this OS, which I think – I mean, anybody who's listened for a long time knows that I think that's been needed for a long time. I think I disagree with Norm though. I don't think the September tablet. I don't think we're going to get a double iPad this year.
I think I'm going to not put money down, but I'm going to.
Do you know why I think they aren't going to double iPad?
Why don't you think so?
I think they aren't going to double iPad because I don't think they want to. I think they want to avoid having supply chain problems going into the holiday season. They sold 14 million iPads in the holidays iPads in the holidays last year, and 14 million in the entire rest of the year.
Well, here's the thing.
If they launch and they have supply problems.
You assume that when I say another iPad, it's going to be the exact same form factor.
Oh, they might do the iPhone 1 thing where they add a larger capacity or something, change the color.
I think there's going to be an iPad either refresh or an entirely different model, maybe a different size even, by late this second half of this year. Hmm. That's my
part of the reason why I don't buy the September. At least Gruber's argument was that they would bundle it in with the iPad event or the iPod event that they have every September.
So they could resync up their annual release.
Doesn't make sense to me because I feel like those two product lines don't really have a whole lot to do with each. Well,
I agree why it doesn't make sense to you. Now, my original thought was it didn't make sense because the way people buy iPods is, yeah, iPods are $200. You wait till September, then back to school. And also, you know, you have September is a perfect time because then you have October, November for early adopters. Then you have enough supply for November, December, January for the holiday season.
Mm-hmm. And $200
is reasonable, you know, for a high value gift. iPads are not that. iPads are something that you build up over a year of demand, and then in the holiday they sell a lot, but it's not like it's announced and then everyone's going to buy it at once.
The big difference between iPhone and iPad, even though they run the same OS, is that iPad is something you can give as a gift. Nobody's ever going to give an iPhone as a gift. iPod Touch you can give as a gift. There's no commitment, no contract.
iPad is something you can give as a gift?
I'd say iPad is something you can give as a gift.
Wow.
No. I mean, it's the big gift that you get. If your kid wants a laptop in the old days, you give him a fucking iPad. God, no.
That's so sad. Kid gets an iPad instead of a laptop.
Right. Well, I mean, you have a laptop.
I guess if it was like a netbook, you'd want iPad.
Yeah,
over
I'd
netbook.
Rather have an iPad than a netbook.
But like a MacBook versus an iPad?
Well, that's a fool's calculus. The other thing I really think is that if you guys don't think that Apple has teams of accountants and economists looking at spending trends across the United States and the world throughout the different months, you know, before they launched the iPhone cycle, knowing it's going to be an annual cycle in June, they looked to see, oh, okay, tax returns come in April, so yeah, you know, people are flush in June. They're doing the same thing with iPad. If they feel like they need to shift, they'll shift. They wouldn't have launched the iPad in April if they didn't think that they could continue selling it in April indefinitely. That's next Wednesday.
But yeah, back to Matt's original point, I still don't think he should buy an iPad 2 this year.
And that's contrary to your normal iOS buying. You say to buy on day one because it's just going to be outdated sooner if you wait longer.
Yeah, I know you don't have an iPad right now, Matt, and you're like in the market for a tablet, but we're Honeycomb – and where Android tablets could be in 6 months, I think that the market's going to look way more competitive and less of a no-brainer.
Part of the reason why I'm not interested in Android on tablets, probably not for a while, is simply because I already have an Android phone. I need something iOS. I kind of need to have my feet in both waters right
for
now.
Work,
because, I mean, it's right. – Yeah, even just for work purposes. But, I mean, like from – like. This is the second time I've had an iPad for, you know, an extended period of time, and like I really enjoy it. You know, especially compared to all the hands-on time that I've had, you know, with a lot of those, you know, really early Android tablets. I mean, it blows them out of the water.
Well, they're orders of magnitude worse than the iPad.
Yeah.
do you feel like app investment, you know, the fact that the apps that you paid for on your Nexus will carry over to an Android tablet but not to an iPad? I mean, is that compelling at all to you?
You know what? It's funny because I mean I find the only apps which I really buy are, at least on Android, the only apps which I bought are things that either directly affect Android OS, like, you know, beautiful widgets, ROM manager, things that don't really have any home on iOS, or games. Gotcha. And to be completely honest, I mean I don't really buy a lot of games to begin with. Okay. I mean, Angry Birds is free. I think the only thing I bought is Fruit Ninja. And quite frankly, I have no problem paying another $2 for that on iOS. I mean, it's not a big deal.
Plus, in the Android market, the fragmentation is worse. I mean, you have these apps for tablets, right? And then there's no, like, it's not, unlike iOS, there's no here. Yes, an app like Angry Birds will work on both, like, the Galaxy Tab, the phone, and the Motorola Tab, Motorola Zoom. But if you have the, you know, there's just going to be a separate version for the tablet optimized version.
Yeah, the HD
version. And there's no like plus like on the iOS. Like you can get the app plus where you get both versions for one click.
That's true.
Can you? Oh, is that a thing?
Depends.
On iOS, some apps have that plus symbol. So if you pay once, you get both.
It's optional. Okay.
And it's not two separate.
To the publisher of the app.
Yeah. It's not two separate icons or two separate listings.
It's even the same executable. So when you back it up to your Mac or your PC or whatever, then the same executable works on the iPhone and the iPad.
That's nice.
Yeah. So I guess that wraps it up for iPad rumors, news, all that stuff.
We'll have much more Zoom coverage. I mean, we're learning so much about the Zoom since our 3 hours of hands-on time when we shot that video, and we learned that there's actually an HDMI port.
Yeah, the mystery port that we talked about in the live stream is a mini HDMI, which now I should know what they look like because I have like four devices with them. We'll be back. We also have more Atrix stuff coming up. We're going to do a web top quick look as soon as we get the dock in. It was dopey that that thing doesn't work without the dock, but I mean, whatever. Sell your $200
keyboard. Something else immediately. I'm just browsing right now on both the iPad and the Zoom. Aliasing on the Zoom is worse than on the iPad.
I'm pretty sure after looking at it, it's not an IPS screen for sure. I'm almost certain it's a TFT screen.
I'm not even talking about the screen quality, the physical screen. I'm talking about the rendering. Text renders with better anti-aliasing on the iPad than it does on Android.
I mean, Apple has always paid attention to font rendering, and Linux has never paid attention to font rendering. And at core, we're talking about OS X versus Linux here in a kind of oversimplified way. Last thing, there's a couple of Android phone updates. I think they just pushed Gingerbread out to pretty much all the Nexus ones, it seems like, this week, right? Right,
yeah.
Matt? You said you got it. I've heard some reports from users on T-Mobile Nexus ones. I don't know anybody who has an AT&T Nexus one in the U.S. So.
Yeah, and also I think Nexus S has got 2.33.
Okay, so that's the point update. The other big news... Froyo is finally coming to the Samsung Captivate. AT&T officially says pushing today, February 24th. Don't press that check for update button, Captivate users, or you will get kicked off. So, just wait for it. It'll come. It'll come. Now it's time for a little bit of the podcast I like to call the question phase.
We haven't talked about stuff, what? Our tests.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff we've been testing.
Stuff we're testing. Shit. I'm bad at this. You think I do this every week? This has been a great week for Tested. We've had a ton of awesome stuff in the office. I mean, every week's a great week at Tested. The top man, Dave, came in yesterday morning carrying four UPS packages and says, man, it must be great to be an editor. Every day you get packages.
Yeah,
pretty good. Norm, you took the Bowers and Wilkins. I mean, I'm going in order of chronological order, not okay. Order of excitement.
All right.
You took the P5 Bowers and Wilkins headphones for test listen last weekend.
Yep.
And this week, are you wearing them on the subway and stuff?
I'm wearing them on the subway. They are great as noise isolators.
Okay.
And also, your warmers because it's kind of cold out.
So we have a quick look on the site right now. These are they're like everything from Bowers and Wilkins. They are crazy expensive, but they sound very nice.
They do sound very nice. I haven't actually revealed exactly what headphones I'm getting in for my high-end headphone review roundup.
You
want
to do that now?
I don't because some companies are not either don't have stock or just haven't gotten back to me.
Oh, okay.
I do have a couple high-end really like Bose. I can say Bose is sending a pair.
Okay.
And a couple recommendations from users. I did get headphones from those recommendations.
Oh, good. Okay.
Look for that. We're not going to do first looks, quick looks on all the headphones that I get in just because it's hard to show off a headphone.
It's hard to do sound
actually,
stuff.
Yeah. Listening to it. But for the very notable ones, there will be some first look videos.
If there's interesting features to show, then we'll do first looks. And then that'll be a written roundup probably, right?
Absolutely.
Of course, also we had the Sony LiveView.
Yeah, Sony LiveView, which you're not wearing right now.
I forgot it. I have four devices that
How
I charge.
How are you supposed to test it if you're not wearing it?
I know. Well, I left the house at 6. I was in a big hurry, and I forgot to pick it up off my nightstand. It'll be fully charged, though. So tomorrow
I'm very surprised.
I'll get to see how
people
the battery life works.
Pretty excited about it.
Well, it's real polarizing. Do you know what this thing is, Matt?
The Sony LiveView?
Yeah, the little watch.
Yeah, the little
phone remote
thing. Is it? I don't know. Preliminary thoughts. I mean, is the thing useful? Is it?
It feels like the future. Like, I mean, I say that a lot, and I know it sounds dopey, but like this one, like the when I first started at Maximum PC in 2000, we were talking about personal area networks because Bluetooth was a new thing back then. We thought, oh man, Bluetooth, all of our shit's going to talk to each other, and then you know that didn't work out. So this thing uses Bluetooth. After I just shit on Bluetooth. This thing uses Bluetooth, and it ties into some low-level software that Sony installs and kind of tracks what's going on in the phone. So it keeps track of it lets you know when you have a text message, lets you know when somebody's calling. And so, for example, last night I was driving home. It looks like a little kind of square watch. It's like iPod Nano size, right?
No, it's thicker than iPod Nano, but dimensions, like
the length and height are about the same. Driving along, my wrist starts vibrating. I'm like, oh shit, what's going on? I had a call, so I looked over my watch. I was like, oh no, Okay, I'll answer this one. So, you know, answered the call, blah, blah, blah. The nice thing is you didn't have to take your phone out of your pocket to see who's calling or the contents of a text message or whatever. Is it the most awesome thing ever? No. Would I like to have that in a more kind of socially presentable capability, something that doesn't look like a dive watch band and a square chunk of plastic and glass? Okay, maybe.
I love the demo, like the press photos they had released for that. I mean, the one I always use is the rock climber lady who's like rock climbing, and then she has a watch. Like, she's gonna check her Twitter messages or her SMS, like as rock climbing.
Of course,
because you can't.
It doesn't need total concentration.
You can't put your hand in your pocket and grab your phone out to send a text message.
Right, you drop your phone, it's gone, man.
Yeah, but this is you know, tied to your hand.
Yeah. I like the guy who clipped the $100 thing to his messenger bag. I did that for about 3 minutes and realized that was a terrible idea because that would fall off and I would never, ever notice. Yeah. So
it's like 80, 83 bucks on Amazon right now. It's actually – not many people have it. I think it was more of a UK device.
Yeah. It's important. I think the people who are selling it on Amazon are actually not Amazon. They're importing it from the EU.
And the thing is that this – even if it's not great, it demonstrates – a feature that I think we're going to see a lot more of. And I really believe that maybe not this year, but maybe next year, Apple will have their next Nano, maybe, will be a watch.
Some sort of ambient. Well, I think thinking of it as a watch is not the right idea.
We'll be optimized for watch use.
Yeah, it's like an ambient computing type device rather than. You know, something that you pull out of your pocket.
Because if you talk about the Palm 3 with the touchpad and how you have that, you touch the Palm 3 to the touchpad and documents transfer over, you know, adding another device to that could work, right?
And battery technology is getting good enough. I mean, this thing seems like it has about a one, like you have to charge it every night, which is a little bit of a drag. I'd like it to be a once a week charge like the Fitbit. Although with a screen, I know that's not necessarily realistic now. But battery's getting better. Wireless is getting better. I don't think it's out of the question that in a few years we'll actually see something that's really usable and discreet. So that – I mean, and this is the thing that kind of disappointed me about the comments, because I like to think that the tested audience is polite, because, I mean, for the most part, you guys are. But, I hate going to dinner or hanging out with somebody – and you're sitting there having a conversation with them. All of a sudden, they just eyes glaze because they felt their pocket vibrate and their fucking hand is in their phone. A friend of mine said a few months ago, the best friend that I have what was it he said? Something about not knowing what kind of phone my best friend has. You know, that's nice. I don't want to always have phones out everywhere I go. It's rude to drop talking to a human being in front of you for somebody that's on the other end of the line, unless you're waiting for your wife to have a baby or something urgent, equally urgent, I think. I'm old, though, so I believe in politeness.
What if you're texting the person across from you?
Well, that's okay. I'm okay with that. Totally okay with that.
All right, what else did we get in?
Let's see.
So we talked about the Atrix, talked about the Zoom.
Yeah.
Just earlier today, we got another Bowers & Wilkins product in. This actually is not out yet. We saw it at CES. It's the Zeppelin Air.
So we reviewed this at Maximum PC. Mike Brown reviewed it a few years ago. And literally up until that point, he had shit upon one iPod dock after the next. I think he liked to eclipse one okay and literally just dismantled all these iPods. Because, you know, as a general rule, they're kind of shitty speakers attached to a licensed iPod dock connector. And they don't sound very good. They don't fill a room. You know, they sound tinny or too bassy, or they woofle when you fire the subwoofer. They're just not good products. Mike loved the Zeppelin, So I took it home one weekend and I loved the Zeppelin, because unlike most of these other iPod docks, this thing can fill a room with sound, like a big room, not a little tiny
without
office.
Distortions.
Yeah, without sounding like it's too loud or whatever. I mean, it's got a crazy speaker design. It looks like a big ovoid. It looks like a Zeppelin, which is why they call it a Zeppelin. But it produces a lot of bass. It sounds really good. Worked with all the iPhone stuff. It had an auxiliary input if you wanted to plug a Sonos box or a Squeeze box or something like that in, or some other device that doesn't have an iPod dock connector. And it's a really nice thing. But the old one was getting a little dated. So it didn't work with newer iPhones, right? You wanted you to turn off the radio, or it wouldn't charge them, stuff like that. You know, it was time. So they updated it.
Yep. And it's been 3 years since the last one came out. And the big feature, of course, I mean, there are some hardware changes. You'll have to watch the first look for all the details. But the big thing is AirPlay.
Yeah.
And this, when it works, it's not perfect. When it works, it's an amazing,
you keep saying
amazing
that
feature.
I mean, I find it to be pretty reliable. There's some rules that you have to understand about how it works.
Well, if there are rules, if there's a certain like order of operations to get it to work.
The order of operations is simple. Whoever uses connects to it first has access. Now, everybody else gets the shaft.
There's more than that.
No way, dude.
Yep. For example, I'll explain how it works first.
AirTunes is, in case you don't know, is the music and video streaming thing. In this case, it's only music because AirPlay, this is just speakers, AirPlay. It's what replaced, I don't know, it's been around for a long time in the Airport Express and Apple TV. They launched this AirPlay thing with the new Apple TV, the Apple TV 2.0.
So what happens is you don't actually have to dock your phone into this iPod dock to play music from it, because the iPod dock is connected to your wireless network. There is a little bit of setting up. It's not just plug and play. But once it's connected to your wireless network and you have enabled on you can either enable it on iTunes on your computer, or just over your phone, once you start playing music, an icon will pop on the bottom right-hand corner. You click it. You click the name of the dock, which in this case is Zeppelin. And then your music will stream from your phone to the router back to the Zeppelin and play music.
Yeah.
Should work perfectly. The hiccups that I've come across so far are that if I'm locked into the Zeppelin and then I don't unlock and just walk away out of the Wi-Fi range, that IP is reserved and it'll keep on looking for my phone. And other people cannot log in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I mostly use AirPlay with my at home. I use it with Apple TV, and I usually use, this sounds crazy, but it actually works really well, is I use either an iPhone or an iPad or something to use the remote app to control the library on my desktop at home, iTunes library on my desktop at home.
Right. So,
and then play out to that, which works really well.
So the signal for your way is you're actually using the remote app, which doesn't actually have any media on your iPad. So remote app controls from the iPad to the router to your laptop or PC, iTunes. Then that goes back to the router to the Zeppelin and plays. Or it's AirPlay and plays.
Yeah.
But then because you're using the remote app, once you click stop, it will disconnect and iTunes is smart enough to know to release that connection.
Yeah, but even when I'm like streaming audio from an iPhone or an iPad or something, it's still, if you don't just turn it off, it stops when you take the device out of range or stop playing.
I mean, I'll do more testing from my demo yesterday and what I've experienced today. You do have to manually release it.
Oh, that's a bummer.
But I think that's a problem with AirPlay more than this device.
Well, you don't have to try it. Compare it to the Apple TV. I'm really interested to see how it stacks up when you're using it with the Apple TV. And the neat thing is, of course, you can pipe anything through using that. So, you know, whether it's apps or games or whatever, which I don't know why you'd ever play games on your iPhone or whatever and pipe it through the
TV. Just the audio.
Yeah, that seems crazy, but what do I know? And then the last thing is I did post the home screen, custom home screen. So we've talked about that already. I don't think we need to do that anymore. Can we do questions now, Norm?
Let's do questions.
As always, if you have a question, you can get it answered by sending it in audio format or written format, but preferably audio format to podcast@tested.com. Keep it under 10 minutes and under a minute. I mean, sorry, keep it under 10 megabytes and under a minute. We like a little hometown trivia if you have it. So so anyway, let's go on to the first question. Oh, and you can use the voice recorder on your iPhone or your Android app or whatever. Use your headset with it, though. It seems to be better audio quality. And if you want to be really awesome, run it through Levelator before you send it over. We'd love that. Thanks. Here's the first question.
Hey, Tested Podcast. This is Zach from Boulder City, Nevada. An interesting fact about my town is that even though we're about 15 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip, gambling is illegal in Boulder City.
Dun, dun, dun.
Kind of weird. I've been trying to get this recording done, and it's really been a pain in the butt, so I'm just going to ask my question in the form of song. If you could have any piece of tech from the future, maybe 10 years, who would make it, what would it be, and why would you have it? And what would be any associated fears? La 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 la. Would it gouge out your brains, or would it give you cancer? Or would it just be really cool? I don't know. Tell me what you think. La 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 la. Love the podcast.
That was a fantastic question. Bravo. That was ballsy, man. Yeah. Ballsy.
So did we all have to sing our responses?
No. God, no.
God, no. I wonder if that was written beforehand or if that was just
like impromptu.
Wow. Because it did kind of trail off the end. Like he really could hit those lows. But
I like the la 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 at the end, though. What is your favorite piece of future tech, Mr. Matt Braga? You're first.
10 years.
Favorite
10 years.
Piece of future tech. 10 years. You know what I'd really like to see is flexible screens become a thing. I would love to have some sort of device where I could sort of like physically scale the screen depending on almost like a
stretchy screen.
Yeah, like medieval scrolls or something, you know? Yeah. Like if I just want a small little phone, I can just stretch it out to be a phone. Whereas if I want, you know, newspaper size, A4 paper, I can stretch it out and, you know, have it all display in high quality, high resolution color, et cetera.
Do you fear the possibility of the flexible screen? Like you might accidentally suffocate? Maybe you play with you shouldn't let dogs or children play with it?
You probably should, you know, not store it beside saran wrap or, you know, other things that can also be
You don't
want
to accidentally use it to wrap up your roast.
No. I mean, it would probably look pretty cool. But no.
Norman Chan looks deep in thought over to my left.
I forget, what's the question about personal technology or technology in general?
He wants to know what kind of technology from the 10 years in the future you would like
cold
to
fusion.
Have right now.
Cold fusion.
Not a real thing. That's
fusion. 10 years from now.
Scientifically impossible.
Feasible.
I saw the
feasible.
Same.
You know what I want?
Get Elizabeth's shoe on that.
I want contact lens displays.
Ooh.
That's I don't know. Is that 10 years away?
I think that's 10 years out.
Okay,
think about where we were 10 years
exactly.
ago.
So think
about where we're going to be
in 2010 and 1990 and 2000. 1990 and 2000.
In 1990, cell phones.
No, nobody had cell phones. No internet.
Yeah.
2000, barely internet. In 2010, crazy internet. 2010, 2011, and 2000.
Think about what your computer looked like in 1990, the IBM XT or Tandy color computer, whatever the fuck you were using in 1990. I had a Pentium 3933 in 2000.
I guess your pick would have the easiest fears.
Yeah, I mean,
exploding contact lenses.
Batteries, problems, maybe it starts showing me things that aren't there. So like I'm walking along and I think I'm seeing the ground in front of me and then all of a sudden I walk over a cliff.
Oh man, it's worse than those like – things that swim in your eyes.
Can you trust what your eyes show you? Hmm. Can you trust it?
Gosh.
Brain implant?
Technology. No.
You don't think that's 10 years out? You think that's further?
Yeah.
If you had the option of getting Geordi LaForge eyes today, would you pop out your perfectly good eyeballs for Geordi vision?
I won't even get LASIK.
Yeah, I won't get LASIK either. Mainly because I can't.
I'll wait.
What are you going to wait for?
I'll wait.
Robo LASIK?
I'll wait for the 80 year mark for LASIK. Or
would you get a helper robot like an iRobot or Terminator?
Oh no, I want Watson in the palm of my hand.
Oh, fuck Watson.
I want a computer that is smart enough that I can ask, you know, real questions.
Jarvis.
I want a Jarvis.
I could have a Jarvis.
Yeah.
I want the robot that shoots the fire extinguisher badly. The inappropriate fire extinguisher robot.
Do you want it badly or do you want the robot that shoots it poorly?
I want it badly, but I want the one that shoots it poorly. Okay. And I also want the vision, the contacts with the internet connection.
Can we also agree that exosuits would be badass?
If everybody has exosuits, they're no fun.
Exactly.
But I mean, that is a good point. If you have it 10 years before everybody else, exosuit would be fucking awesome. Because who wouldn't want to be Iron Man? Would you not want to be Iron Man given the opportunity, Norman Chan?
The man with the army of these could rule all of Asia.
Norman is smiling like I've never seen before right now. Yeah. He's just thinking about the possibilities of an army full of Iron Men. I'm going to play the next question now.
Hey, Will, Norm, Gary, and Anna. My name's Dave. I'm from Adelaide in South Australia. A little bit of trivia about Adelaide is that it was the only city, our capital city in Australia, that didn't receive convicts from the UK when it was founded.
Nice.
My question is about the MacBook Air. I bought a 13-inch Air 3 days ago or 4 days ago and have been loving it. It's been fantastic. But I was watching the Big Live show just before and the frame rate was awful. Everything was sort of ghosting around and really laggy. It looked terrible. And I was switching it down from high to medium to low and it didn't really make a difference. But then I was watching, I watched heaps of other stuff off the whiskey sites in HD and it looks perfect. There's no trouble loading it up and it's all great. So I was just wondering if you had any tips for increasing the performance when you watch streaming things off Justin TV or other sites like that. Thank you very much. I love the site and good luck with everything. Cheers.
That was a good question, David. I think the problem is Justin TV, actually, in my experience, is a particularly kind of poorly set up Flash Player. Although I have been, I've been talking to Vinny. We're working on trying some new settings for the live streams, especially so that they'll be a little bit less punishing. Because I think we might have some settings jacked up that are making things a little worse than they necessarily need to be. I mean, the MacBook Air is pretty good at video. I can't remember. I mean, I know I was able to play like YouTube 720p and stuff like that without any problems. I don't have it anymore, so I don't remember specifics about what didn't work. But the other thing is, if you don't mind not watching it live, I assume you're talking about the happy hour and not the Big Live show. Really, you could have been watching the Big Live show. Is that if you're a member, then that stuff is available archived on the sites later. So we post it on it comes up on Giant Bomb first usually, because Vinny usually does those, dumps those in the compressor, and then I add them to Tested, and Tony adds to Comic Vine, and I think Matt adds to Screen later. So.
And you could play those in an MP4 format.
Really? Oh, well, once you've done, done that. The other thing is, no, I guess that doesn't apply. Yeah, we'll keep experimenting with that, because I have heard some complaints lately, especially that things are bad. So I'll talk to Vinny again. Another question. I hit the wrong keyboard.
Hey, Will, Norm, Anna, Gary, and whoever else is on the podcast this week. My name is Greg. I'm from the lovely state of Michigan, where it was 60 degrees on Friday last week, and last night, Monday night, we got 8 inches of snow. So, loving the weather. I just got a quick question I've always wondered, but I've never taken the time to actually get an answer for. Why do TVs, when you turn them off, like 10 to 15 minutes after you turn it off, they make this loud cracking sound? I assume it's just like static electricity discharging or something like that, but I'm not sure. And it's always something that, like, I'll turn off my TV, go to bed, and I'm laying in my bed, and then all of a sudden I hear it and be like, I really wish I knew exactly what that was. So I figured I'd go ahead and ask you guys. And also, I have a suggestion for maybe a feature that you guys could run. About 2 weeks ago or so, the supposed secret recipe of Coca-Cola got leaked. And I think it would be a really cool video, or maybe like a live show segment, for you guys to try and make your own Coca-Cola and see how that works out for you. All right. Thanks. Love the site. Love the podcast. And appreciate all you guys' opinions on everything. So thanks and have a good day.
So what do you think the cracking sound is? Mine doesn't do that.
So it all depends on what type of TV he has. My suspicion is that it's a rear projection TV, or it's not an LCD TV, not a flat panel, or even could be a flat panel. But what happens is that many TVs, when you turn it off, it's not really off. It's actually in a standby mode, because some people, when they turn off their TVs, they want to turn it back on immediately, and they won't want the manufacturer smart enough that they don't want people to wait for the entire boot up. And this is especially the case with rear projection TVs, because turning on that lamp actually damages the lamp a lot more than having it run. So what it is it puts it on like a standby mode for just a little bit, and when it's comfortable, a set amount of time that the TV doesn't think you're going to turn it back on, it does, then it fully turns off, and that's when you get the cracking sound.
Yeah, I just did a quick Google. That's definitely one thing that people said. The other thing is that it can be a relay. So the software switch, it may not be like the starter on a car. The switch that you turn in the car isn't a high enough capacity switch to actually take the amperage that comes across from the battery to turn the motor and get it started. So the switch that you turn when you twist the ignition actually triggers a solenoid, which is just a bigger switch. And it's a similar sort of situation, especially in bigger CRTs and old rear projection CRTs, and even some LCDs. Mine does make the clicking sound. It's also amplifiers do the same thing, it seems like.
You're a solenoid.
Okay, Matt Rory. there was a second part of that question.
Second part question is Coke.
Oh, I looked at the recipe. There's no percentages.
It's not a recipe. It's ingredients list.
Yeah, just like,
so it doesn't
put some prune juice and some other shit in
here.
Actually
make it.
Cinnamon and nutmeg and cake, and we can try it.
Anna will find some way to ruin it.
Yeah, she'll try to booze it up and make something that makes us all sick.
Ugh. See, that'd be part of the fun, is you guys can guess all of the amounts, the percentages, and just try to make some sort of.
I saw that in Superman 3 when Richard Pryor tried to make kryptonite.
Yeah, he replaced the mystery element with tar. And
yeah.
Guess what happened? Superman turned evil.
Super duper evil. Do you want Norm to turn evil, Matt Braga?
Exactly.
He's already
it could have
tar
some
in our coke.
Consequences.
Oh boy, this is going to end well.
Hello, Will. Hello, Will, Anna, Norm, and Gary. This is Edward from Seattle, Washington.
Hi, Edward.
I've been looking for a new laptop for work, and from all of my searching in terms of design and build quality, I haven't seen anything better than the Apple MacBook Pros. The thing is, after tax, I would be looking to pay nearly $2,000 for the 15-inch MacBook Pro. For that price, I could get two better configured, albeit shittierly designed, PC laptops. I'm looking for something in the 14-inch range. Two of my top candidates were the HP Envy 14 and the Dell XPS 14. Unfortunately, HP has discontinued the Envy 14's 1600 by 900 display option, and Dell has completely discontinued the XPS 14 line. Do you guys have any suggestions for a PC alternative to the MacBook Pro? And secondly, why do you think PC manufacturers have been completely incapable of coming up with a comparable alternative? Interesting fact about Seattle. Per square foot, Seattle has the highest number of hippies of any city in the universe. Thanks, guys.
He hasn't been to the hate.
You need Eric Cartman, man.
Dude.
Exactly. So I think that there's a couple things going on. One is that Apple is, you know, like luxury car manufacturers, Apple isn't afraid to charge more for something if they think they can and if they put money in it. And part of the reason that Macs are more expensive is that Apple doesn't make a whole lot of extra money after the sale, unlike with PC manufacturers. So when you buy a Dell laptop or an HP laptop or a Lenovo or Sony or whoever, then there's usually a whole shitload of software installed that then you have to uninstall. And a lot of people will, you know, buy into that software, which then makes money from the manufacturer who provided that software in the first place. So when they're not making money after the sale,
plus support,
they charge more. Yeah. And support. Yeah. You get a 1-year warranty versus a 90-day warranty or 30-day warranty or whatever on laptops a lot of times. And you have the added benefit of the infrastructure. So you can take it into the store if something breaks and they'll just hand you a new one rather than having to mail it and wait for it to come back. Now that said, MacBooks, there is a fairly high price that you pay for MacBooks and OS X and all that versus Windows. I typically recommend the Envy 14 or the Dell XPS 14 when people ask what laptops they should buy if they don't want to pay for MacBooks. I know I really like the Lenovo ThinkPad series. I want to say X300, but I think it's the X200S is really good, although it's a little bit smaller than you're looking for. Basically, any of the Lenovo ThinkPad notebooks that are the old school black plastic design, it's not as pretty as a MacBook, but it is every bit as sturdy and well built as a MacBook. I really like those laptops a lot. Again, they're a little more expensive. If you're comparing a MacBook to your laptop to something that you're going to buy at Best Buy, a retail frame, you're getting something that's a lot different. So, one of the reasons MacBooks are sturdy is that they have the unibody design. The laptops that you're buying for residential use, for consumer use at Best Buy and all those kinds of stores are typically plastic frames. So they're really bendy, shitty laptops. If you're looking at the XPS 14 and the Envy, you're out of that range. But don't compare. You're going to get a much sturdier, more long-term reliable laptop if you buy from the small business line like the ThinkPad or the enterprise lines, even though they're a little more expensive. And that's the difference between a laptop lasting a year or a year and a half and 2 or 3 years in my experience. Anything to add, Norm?
No, I think that's absolutely right. And it really sucks that the 13-inch MacBook Pro, again, with the relatively low-res screen, if that had been bumped up along with the GPU, then that would be a no-brainer for a buy. And you know, with the upgrades at $1,500.
I mean, what do IMAX cost these days? They're like $1,500, right?
Yeah.
I almost think if I were buying something right now and I already have a monitor and keyboard and mouse for a desktop and I wanted a laptop, I might buy the cheap MacBook Air and get like a small desktop to use when you need more power. I mean, I know that's not exactly what you're asking for. But if you want a mobile computer, I think get a mobile computer. If you want something that's powerful, get a desktop or an all-in-one or something like that. Is not a bad way to go. It's not for everyone, for sure.
That's kind of weird. There's no – oh, wait. No, never mind. I'm wrong. I was going to say that there's no i7 IMAX, then I realized I was
– No, the 24 and 27 are i7, aren't they?
Yeah. I was confused because all the base configs are i3s and i5s.
Oh, right. Well, the i3, i5 is still the same architecture. It's just slower and gimpy.
Yeah.
i5 at least.
Yeah, high five. One last question, and then I guess we'll wrap it up and maybe do some fake outtakes.
Woo!
Hello, Will, Norman, maybe Anna and Gary. This is Reese from Murfield in the UK, and I have a question. There are a lot of DVDs that you can't get in the UK that you can get in America, such as Batman the Animated Series and Batman Beyond, to name just a couple. And I was wondering, if I imported those and ripped the DVDs, would there be any problems with me playing those back on British TVs, like because we know NTSC and PAL and anything? I'm not like a huge wizard when it comes to video and stuff, so I'm not sure. So I wanted to know before I ordered them. Any advice you can give me on that area would be, you know, just brilliant. A little fact about the town where I live, Murfield, where I grew up. I went to a secondary school here called Murfield Free Grammar, and that's the same school that Patrick Stewart went to. So,
oh, yeah, nice.
That's normally the fact I break out if anybody asks.
Excuse me.
Anyway, thank you for listening.
Sir Patrick Stewart. Get right.
You're kind of an asshole, Norm. I'm so overclumped at the thought of Patrick Stewart, I can't remember what the question was.
PAL, NTSC.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It depends on what you're playing the video through more than the video itself. If you have a device that is capable of reading H.264 videos, when you rip a DVD with a handbrake or something like that, first you'll need a region, either a utility that strips the region lock off of the drive, or a drive that isn't region locked, or you need to get just two DVD drives and have one that's a USA drive and one that's a Euro drive, region one and region two,
I think. They're also, PAL and NTSC broadcast at different frame rates. So I think PAL video, when ripped and played, sometimes you get a little higher pitch.
Yeah, but I think you can correct that. I think handbrake will correct that, actually.
Yeah.
I've not ripped any PAL videos since VHS days, though, so I don't know for sure. Do you have any experience with that, Matt?
The only remote experience I had was playing PAL games on my modded Xbox, and it worked fine. So I mean, it's really just a matter of having, you know, just being able to convert the signal, which I mean, something like handbrake would, I feel like, have no problem doing.
Yeah, I mean, worst case, your player, if you're streaming it to the Xbox or something like that, or even better, like a dedicated box like the Boxy or Roku or something like that, I would expect that the player would handle the conversion process for you without a whole lot of problem. So that, I guess, does it for questions this week. If you have a question, podcast@tested.com, send it in. And that is our show as well, for Norman Chan. And, you know, Matt, I realize that you haven't been on in a while and we haven't introduced you. You were with us at CES, obviously. but Matt is a frequent contributor to Tested and an all-around stand-up guy, Canadian, too.
Affable.
Might as well mention that. Affable. Most affable guy I know. but yeah, you can find Matt Braga's byline on Tested a couple times a week, more than that. We'd like to see him more, as much as you have time for
today.
Right? Yeah.
Today.
Yeah, if you have questions and your bagels, I think on the boards, right?
Yep. Look for the milk carton.
Yeah, exactly. So, for Norman Chan and Matt Braga, who I just introduced, I'm Will Smith. We will be back next week with another episode of This Is Only a Test, and stay tuned for fake outtakes.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Tested.
I love planets. I love being on one.
Tested.
I think Anna makes – I don't know if people know, but Anna is the composer of that ditty. And I think she likes to take it whenever Norm or I say something stupid and make a new version. And then she sends it over to me. Yes, insightful. I love planets. That's my favorite one so far. We have fake – I don't have anything to talk about this week. It's been last space shuttle launch today.
Yes.
What?
Really? Last Discovery. Last space shuttle Discovery launch.
Oh, okay.
It's still the last shuttle launch.
No, there's one more.
Oh, is there one more?
I think there's another.
Oh, because they kept
Atlantis.
Bumping them
yeah,
forward.
Yeah, one kept getting postponed. Why does it take them 2 days to go 245 miles into space? Why, Matt Braga? Why?
Maybe exoplanets photographed during formation.
Yeah, we talked about planets last week.
No, that's
always
true.
Talk about planets.
Norm loves planets. He likes being
Star
on
Trek.
One.
Oh, let's talk about Trill.
What's Trill?
Oh, this is a good one. Right. Mafia's corpse dissolving claims exaggerated.
Oh, yeah. Lie doesn't do that much, it turns out. What's Trill, Norman Chan?
Talk about Trill in Star Trek.
There's oh, no. Dax, worst character ever.
So what would it be like if you had a symbiote living inside you and the symbiote was who you were? Because in The Next Generation, the Trill were they first introduced. It was a Beverly Crusher episode where she fell in love with a man. And he didn't look like the Trill that we – Norman knew he didn't have all the crazy tattoo stuff. along the sides of his face. He had ridges on his forehead.
Okay.
And but they were still called the Trill. And he was injured in a shuttle accident or an attack. And he refused to be teleported back to sickbay, or else he said he would die. But when he was brought to sickbay, they showed his stomach, and there was like a monster inside it, and that was a symbiote, and that was who he was, who he said he was. And the host
was that the first prime time they discovered the Trill in Star Trek.
Yep. The first time they had explained the Trill in Star Trek. And then the big twist, of course, of the episode was that his new host was a woman, and Beverly Crusher could not fall in love with a woman, even though it was the same person. So,
wow.
In the Deep Space Nine, of course, Dax, Jadzia. So Dax, like the last name is the Trill name, and the first name is the host name. And I guess when the host gets a new symbiote, they get all the memories of the previous life. But and the memories are kind of integrated and mixed. But then I guess I don't know what the discussion is. I just want to talk about Trill and having symbiotes. I want the collective memories of everyone, who's lived.
I don't
in a symbiote.
I like being me. If I was the symbiote, I'd be okay with that, I guess. The symbiotes get the good end of that deal, right? The hosts get fucked because they get no life.
Well, I guess the way they explained it was that the symbiote is kind of like a repository for memories, but the personality is still the host personality. And the host, I mean, the personality might change a little bit because the memories can create conflicts in how you feel about things and people, but it's still you. You just have this new wealth of knowledge and experience.
I've got a better topic.
What is your topic?
The sun exploded last week and we are all still alive.
How is that possible?
Well, when the sun's atmosphere explodes, as happens every 13 years in a cycle, it happens all the time.
I want to say the sun is always exploding since
it's fusion.
Through fusion.
It's fusion. That's not really an explosion as much as an implosion. It makes two atoms into one. But anyway, basically what happened is there were a series of giant solar flares and coronal mass ejections last week.
Whoa.
Yeah, it sounds a little dirty. But it turns out it's just some shit being blasted out of the sun and it happened to be aimed toward us last week. And people who lived in northern latitudes, like our friend Matt Braga, did you see Aurora Borealis last week?
Are you kidding me? I'm a lot farther south than you think.
When coronal mass ejections happen, there are Aurora Borealis as low as San Francisco. It was cloudy the night it was supposed to happen.
You know what? It's funny. I mean, I've looked in the past, and I mean, if you go about an hour north, sometimes you can see them a little bit, but I've never been able to see one, which is a shame.
That seems an hour north sounds like you'd have to get snowshoes or something. So anyway, the reason this is bad is that it disrupts GPS and stuff like that. I mean, I guess I don't know.
Things don't work. It just makes things not work.
What else we got? Anything?
I'm looking.
Did people have requests last week?
No.
What's a bad astronomer? I need to read more science blogs. That's the takeaway from this. Bad astronomy. Here we go. Wait. Okay. You not have science in Canada, Matt?
We do actually. We have a very good. The dudes that I write for sometimes for the CBC have a really good science section.
So you're not being particularly helpful here.
I'm sorry. I'm on Wired because that's where Norm told us to go. I'm just listening to Norm like a robot.
Oh, this is a good one. This is from Bad Astronomer. How far away? If you were holding a basketball, hold on. Oh, God damn it. This is a video. I can't watch that right now. Hold on. Let me make sure I can't watch it. Okay. The Earth is 12,720 kilometers across, 740 kilometers across, and the Moon is 3,474 kilometers in diameter. It's a ratio of 3.7 in size of blah, 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 blah. A standard NBA basketball, 24 centimeters in diameter, and a tennis ball, 6.7 inch meters diameter, have about the same ratio size ratio, right?
Wait, a basketball and a tennis ball?
A basketball and a tennis ball.
So the Earth and the Moon.
Yes, the Earth is about eight times the size of the Moon.
The Moon is massive.
No, the Moon is not massive.
If 1/8 the size of the Earth is massive.
Okay, yes, that is
relative
still
to what I think of the moon.
Compared to a bag of peanuts, yes, it's massive.
This isn't like fucking
massive.
Little Prince planet where you can like have a hike around the planet in you know in an hour.
Well, but if
the moon is massive.
If the moon is 6.7 centimeters in diameter. Oh, wait, no, that's the tennis ball. If the moon is 2,150 miles in diameter, let's see, 2 pi squared is 2 I think you could ride that one of those space golf carts around the moon in a couple of days if you were going pretty fast, right?
No.
Were they powered by fusion or something, or solar cells, or batteries? What? How do they? Have
batteries.
A gas tank?
There's batteries.
I guess internal combustion doesn't work on the moon. Anyway, using a basketball as a proxy for Earth and a tennis ball as a proxy for the moon, how far away would the tennis ball be from the basketball?
For,
if it was to scale.
Okay. I'm going to say the length of a basketball court.
Wow. That's
a football field.
How long is a basketball court?
Basketball court is – oh, so you got a sport. This is science talk, not sports talk.
Yeah. I don't know how big a
basketball court.
Like 50 feet?
No, more than that.
Well, 100 yards is a football field, right? It's way smaller than a football field.
Yes, it is way smaller.
Do you have basketball in Canada, Matt?
Yeah.
We have the Toronto Raptors.
I thought that was a hockey team.
No.
Plays out of the same stadium.
Oh,
arena.
Yeah, see, might as well.
Basketball
Give me a measure in feet.
50 feet. 94 by 50 feet.
Okay, so 50 feet.
Is 94 feet. You mean 94
feet?
94
feet. 94
feet long.
Oh, 94 feet long.
So my guess is 94 feet.
You are crazy, crazy high. Oh, Matt Braga, what's your guess?
5 meters.
Oh,
no,
Matt's much closer.
Wait. What's 5 meters in terms of feet?
5 meters would be
15 feet?
16 feet,
yeah.
Somewhere in there.
Okay.
Less than 20 feet. The actual correct answer, 7.37 meters, or if you're American, 24 feet about.
24 feet.
So a quarter of a basketball court or
I guess that's why you don't tell kids in grade school to build a scale model of the solar system.
Now, if you do a scale model of the solar system, that's different. If the basketball is the sun, then Pluto has to be like 35 miles away.
Yeah, exactly. This is
of course Pluto doesn't
this
count
was
anymore.
An Encyclopedia Brown like mystery that for
are
people
back
who might
on Encyclopedia
know,
Brown again.
Yes, Encyclopedia Brown bugs me. And you try to fool the kids in the town by getting them to donate money to build a replica model of the universe.
Well, that doesn't work.
Or maybe it was a solar system. And Encyclopedia Brown was smart enough to know that if it were to do that, he couldn't build it in his garage, basically. And that's how you solve that mystery. Thank you, Encyclopedia Brown.
Oh, here we go. The largest scale model of the solar system is in Sweden. I got to find
Swedes.
Well, they got
building,
time.
Building scale model of the solar system and video games.
Yes, I am going to. It's the largest permanent scale model of the solar system. It's represented by the Ericsson Globe in Stockholm, the largest hemispherical building in the world. This is from Wikipedia. The inner planets can also be found in Stockholm, but the outer planets are situated northward in other cities along the Baltic Sea.
Wow.
It is in the scale of 1 to 20 million. That is pretty, pretty big. It doesn't say how big the sun is in this. Hold on. List of objects. The sun, the diameter is 71 meters. That's pretty big. That's almost a football field.
That's the sun?
In this scale model, how big do you think the Earth is? If the sun is 71 meters, I'm going to give Matt the first crack at this one. And Norm, you be thinking
solve
about
the puzzle.
Yeah.
Pat, I'll solve the puzzle.
71
Naggers. Meters. It's Naggers, right?
What?
Wrong? Too soon?
Too soon.
But inappropriate?
Too inappropriate. Okay. Both. All of the above. Matt, how big was the Earth?
How big is the Earth? 71 meters is the sun. The Earth is?
500 meters.
What?
Wow. Okay.
No,
wait, no. How big is the model of the Earth if the sun is 71 meters?
In fairness.
Oh, sorry. Oh,
no, they really don't have science up there.
No, Matt is on Skype and his connection's a little bit bad. Because of the snow pigeons.
Okay, so it is 71 meters, so that means the Earth is probably, 100 centimeters?
I'm going to say the size of a ping pong ball.
Okay, you're both wrong, but Matt is less wrong. This is becoming a trend there, science man. The correct answer is 65 centimeters. A ping pong ball would be about 2 centimeters.
Two rulers.
So they're a really big scale model of the Earth.
2 yardsticks.
So the Earth
– meter sticks.
If the Earth is 65 centimeters, we're talking about 2 feet?
Yeah, 2 feet.
So 2 feet
– is that right?
Diameter for the Earth.
No.
Radius?
No.
Diameter? 2 feet diameter?
Six, yeah. 100 centimeters is a meter, so yeah. – yeah, 2 feet. You're right. 2 feet. Sorry.
And then – so 2 feet diameter.
It's just like a beach ball.
Beach ball is Earth, yeah. And then 70 meters is the sun.
Yeah.
Earth is a lot bigger than I thought compared to the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always thought that the Earth was like a
tiny, insignificant speck. Yeah.
Well,
peanuts compared to space.
If I threw a beach ball at a 75 meter diameter mass, it would feel it. It would see it.
So let's go exploring a little bit more. How big do you think Mercury is in this scale model?
No one cares about Mercury.
Okay. How big do you think Jupiter is?
Oh, okay. Mm.
The largest planet in the solar system that we have yet discovered. Did we talk about the mystery planet last week?
We did.
Okay.
I'm going to say, again, the Earth is only, the sun is only 70 so meters.
Sorry, 300 centimeters.
Okay. That is an answer.
300 centimeters, and the Earth is 65
centimeters.
So five times as big as the Earth.
7,100.
Five times the diameter of the Earth. I'm gonna say 10. Nope. I'm gonna say
Norm's dialing it back or up. I don't.
Five meters.
The correct answer is 7.3 meters. Oh, so 2 meter sticks, basically.
So close.
No, 7 meter sticks. Math is hard.
7.5 meters. How many meters is 7.5 meters?
How many meters in a meter stick? How many yards in a furlong? How big do you think Uranus is? I think that's the end of the fake outtakes. I don't think we're going to do anything worse than that. Good talk, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, no worries. Is that a wrap?
Yeah. We usually just end abruptly for the fake outtakes because the end of the show happened 20 minutes ago. Just drop me, I guess, the...
No, did you get my message?
Your message? No, I'll look now. I have two messages.
Because what happened is, remember when we had to do the whole calling, recalling thing? My thing stopped.
No, we're fine. You sounded just fine most of the show, so
okay.
I don't think there's any problem. You're actually breaking up now for the first time in the entire run, so
this has actually been one of the worst casts for me, and just that like things are completely garbled from you guys, and it's not like the mixer. I think it's like it's just the internet is not sending me.
It's almost certainly because I'm on Wi-Fi on the laptop. If I had to guess,
okay.
We'll fix it next time we have you on.
No, that's fine. I mean, it's only happened like once before, so not a big deal.
It's always a problem when we try to do anything fancy, like have people from away on the podcast. But anyway, thanks for calling in, dude.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you guys later.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. See ya.
Bye.
See ya.
Good show.